EWA-517, do you want to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We want to report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind? Over.
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
There 71 Papa Golf, go ahead.
And was anybody at above us to pass us like 30 seconds ago?
There 71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. It's Merger 1095. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. See, I passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Did we just call about the UFOs we saw?
Mm-hmm.
They're out there, taking airplanes.
County dispatch. Bob, I swear to God, 4 calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty.
4 calls.
4 calls on an unidentified flying object.
Let's not take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com.
Hello and welcome to the show, everybody. How are you all? I'm Nick Hunter and you're listening to the UFO Chronicles podcast. This episode, we stay within the United Kingdom. And first we meet Gareth in South Wales. And Gareth's strange encounter occurred in the Welsh Valleys in 1981, when himself and a couple of friends witnessed a bright, blinding light and a figure upon a ridge. Then we head over the Welsh border to Paul in Cambridgeshire. And Paul will be sharing UFO encounters that began in 1978 when he witnessed a cigar-shaped object and several other sightings he experienced up until present day. Paul has also had a few interesting paranormal events happen in his life, and notably a couple which certainly saved his life. Now just quickly, a couple of things. Over the last few months, I've received a few emails asking why I've stopped releasing episodes or have I died? And the problem seems to reside in certain podcast apps like Apple and others, and they seem to need to be updated or refreshed. So in the future, if this happens, just update your apps first or check out my website, ufochroniclespodcast.com, to see if there are new episodes. They always come out on a Sunday, and my episodes tend to be recorded months in advance, so there's no intention to end the podcast or even die just yet. If you enjoy listening to the podcast and would like to help support my work, there is a couple of ways to do this. Either you can join Patreon and become a patron of the show for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate via PayPal. And if you like, you can set up monthly reoccurring payments. All links to support the podcast are below in the show notes and on the website. Any help is extremely appreciated, and it helps the show to continue running. Now, on with the show. Hello, Gareth. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Nick. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. Thank you for coming on and joining us this evening.
No, it's a pleasure. Pleasure to come and chat.
And you're calling from South Wales in the United Kingdom?
Yeah, that's correct.
Now, Gareth, you're going to be sharing an experience you had in the Valleys at the age of 12. Would you like to start there for us, please?
Yeah, sure. So, yeah, I was around 12 years old, so I'm early 50s now. I think that was around 1981, so some time ago. And as you said, it's in the South Wales Valleys area, which if people don't know, is obviously an industrial sort of coal and steel area, as was. A lot of that has sort of gone away now, but a bit like sort of coal and steel areas of Pennsylvania, I guess. People know that a bit more. But at this time, so the industry was still up and running and very heavily going. And geography-wise, as you said, valleys. So it's a series of steep valleys in this coal field with small towns all in between. the coal mines and the steelworks, etc. So at that time, I was brought up in that area, and my grandparents lived in one of these towns. So quite often I'd stay with them, and my father's younger brother, so my uncle, but he was much older than me. He was around, when I was 12, he's probably 17, 18, and his friend around his age, we used to sort of hang around a bit, and we'd go out and play and hang around, kick a ball around. But off the main sort of valley area, if you like, you'd have some sort of small green valleys, no industry, little offshoots, if you like. Well, we used to like to explore those and hang around the woods and play as kids do. So this particular evening, and I recall it was cold, a really cold and clear night and starry night, I think sort of end of November, early December. And it was early evening time, probably around now 6-7. And we went for a walk around and walk up through some woods. And just to sort of, so the listeners can sort of picture it, we were on a sort of steep hillside, walking parallel to the ridge of the hill. So to our left was a ridge about 100 yards up and following along the line of it. And below us, probably 200-300 yards, was the bottom of this little valley. And to our right was a wooded area. To our left was open hillside. So as we walked along parallel to the wood to our right, the open hillside was around to our left, and we could see the ridge of the hill. I can recall, as we're walking along, all of a sudden, to our left, up on the ridge line, was this intense, intense white and bluish light. And I would say, as we're looking up, it just completely lit up the ridge of the hill up above us. And width-wise, I would say, size probably 100 yards wide, just this immense white light shining up from the ground up into the sky with like a bluish tinge. And we couldn't see where this emanated from, but it lit the ridge, which was obviously coming up sort of a black line across it. We all just stopped and sort of froze and looked at it, I recall. And as we were looking, not sure how long this was going for, perhaps a few seconds at this point, there was like strange clanking, sort of metallic noises, like an odd whirring sound, just really odd noises. I can remember getting quite scared and just transfixed by it. And as I looked up, all of a sudden I could see sort of dark figure appear on the ridgeline. I would describe this figure looking like a large built man, I would say 6-7 feet, I'm guessing, sort of quite a big, sort of athletic build, if you like. But the outline against this intense light was difficult to describe, almost like as if he was wearing something. It wasn't like a ordinary jacket or jeans being silhouetted. It looked like quite sharp lines. And the best way, I think when I chatted to you previously, was to describe was, if you imagine somebody in sort of scuba gear or a wetsuit, but without all the tank and all the bits and bobs, just the suit, it looks clean cut as that. So as I was looking up and we were just stood there, this figure started to walk off the ridge, just down towards us a little bit. And in the center of its head, was an intense white beam coming out. I guess almost like if you imagine a head torch as you get these days for walking or outdoor stuff. But it was much more intense and much bigger. So just this very bright, large white light emanating out, almost like a torchlight. Again, I can recall just being scared stiff and just transfixed by it. But then I recall the hillside started to shake and vibrate. This noise was still going. And then to the open area up ahead of us were all sort of sheep fields, if you like. So little mountain farms, sheep graze on there. And they're all dry stone walls separating the fields. And some of the stone from these walls suddenly started to roll down and to be dislodged, I think, by the vibration. And that seemed to, I think, spark us into some sort of movement. The three of us just, I recall, just looked at each other and just ran as fast as we could down through the woods to our right and kept running. We're probably about 15, 20 minutes from where my grandparents lived. I recall we just ran and ran straight back to the house and sort of flew in through their back door, scared stiff about what happened. Didn't look back after running and just kept going. Time-wise, I guess, perhaps the incident was a few minutes long. And I say it's sort of 40 years ago now, which is a long time, but it's been etched on my memory ever since, really. No idea what I was looking at, what I was seeing. I've tried to sort of think it through logically about what it isn't. And I guess there's no industry, although it was industrial area. There's no industry at all in that little valley or on top of the valley or beyond it, beyond the ridge. And there's no police, military, any sort of activity like that goes on up there or did at any time. So I've got no logical sort of answer as to why anything like that would occur or what it was. And thinking about anybody playing a hoax, I guess, well, why would they? Who would they expect to be up there? Because nobody used to really hang around there, perhaps on occasion. So it'd be a bit of an elaborate thing to do with the chances of seeing somebody with pretty remote. So it was just a very strange occurrence, Nick. And apart from close family, it's the first time I've really shared it. But it's always been etched on my memory. I say it's a long time gone. I guess if I was being cynical, like somebody asked me now, I think, well, you were a kid, you know, your memory's playing tricks. But it's clear as day in my mind, and nothing's ever really changed with that memory over all this time, you know?
Completely etched in there.
Yeah, yeah. It's such a strange thing. And I can almost envisage myself back there as I recall it to you now.
When you got down to your grandparents' house, did you tell them?
Yeah, I did. It was almost a sort of comical scene at that point, because I remember coming flying through their back door, like I'd been running like 100 miles an hour, and they used to sit quite quietly in their back room, you know, listening to the radio quite. So I flew in. I think they jumped out of their skins. And I remember I was jabbering on to the 19th of the dozen. I do recall sketching out, doing a drawing of what I saw. What became of that, I never know. It was but a childlike drawing. But I remember trying to tell them, and they were just sort of, you know, just sort of shrugged it off and thought, you know, kids being kids or whatever. But it was such an odd experience. It's always stuck with me.
Do you remember roughly when it was in 1981?
Yeah, I think I always remember, I think end of November, early December. And I remember it was a really clear, starry night, and the moon was quite bright. I say this because where we walked, there's no streetlights. Obviously, we'd walked up this sort of remote valley from the town. And so I can remember we used to do that, and we used to be able to see because it was, you know, lit up with the moon enough to sort of walk up a path. So it was a bit of a dirt path, if you like, before the open ground and to the woods to our right. It was a parallel to the length of the valley.
I mean, during those 1980-1981, you know, there was a lot of stuff going on. you know we had Alan Godfrey up north. He was in 1980, and then we had Rendlesham, which was just a matter of weeks later.
Yeah, it was that sort of time. And
you know, so it's and of course South Wales in general, you know, has always been a hot spot for UFO encounters.
Yeah, and I definitely recall it being that time, and I know just taking an interest in the topic, you know, in more recent times there's been reports from the area, you know, right up until today, really.
Oh yeah, ongoing. It is ongoing.
It's just odd, isn't it? And I've never been able to, I can see it now clear as day, this intense light and this sort of figure, and you know, no rational explanation, if you like. As I said, there's no activity up there, there's no industry in that bit, there's no, you know, army base or anything like that. Could people be doing anything in the night?
I mean, like you said, you know, there's no industry, nobody working up there. So you can kind of discount like a, you know, like a farmer up there or anyone, you know, with his headlights beaming and then him coming out. So you can kind of discount all things like that.
Yeah, because one of the things he said about my grandparents, they sort of said, because you get a lot of those off-road scrambler bikes, you know, kids, especially early 80s, were big into the sort of Japanese bikes, weren't they, you know, and it was a big thing. And they sort of said, it's probably kids a motorbike, but this wasn't that, you know, I never found a motorbike and did then. And, you know, you'd have the sort of, if you had a headlight sort of flashing around, but this was immense. And, you know, and also what shook us into running was actually the mountain shaking. I recall, you know, the dry stone walls sort of get those sort of thin stones sort of about 18 inches long and 2 inches thick. There's loads of those coming rolling end over end down past us, and that seemed to shake us, sort of wake us up and think, bloody hell, we need to run, you know?
Yeah, that would do it.
Yeah, and you think, well, what is dislodging all of those and creating a massive light and who's walking around with a massive head torch? It just, none of it makes any sense, you know?
It doesn't, but then again, a lot of these encounters, they don't make a whole lot of sense.
No, but I can't think of any rational reason, and never have, as to who would be doing that sort of thing. And I said hoax, you know, I don't see it. It's a bit elaborate for the chances of nobody seeing it.
Yeah, it's a bit like the Bigfoot stories and stuff. I mean, a lot of these encounters in the middle of literally nowhere, when, you know, you're not had the chance of bumping into someone. I mean, fair enough, if it's on video, then chances are someone put a costume on and then recorded it.
But, yeah.
You know, but like you said, you know, it's very remote where you are, and the chance of someone going up there for a bit of a joke and then being seen by someone, you know, I'd chuck that straight out.
Yeah, I agree. And it would be pretty elaborate as well, just to even create that intensity of light, because literally the width, I would say, could be like 100 yards at the top of the ridge, completely white, piercing light going up into the sky, with like blue tinge to it, and this really odd sort of metallic sound. So I even think, was there any sort of diggers up there and that sort of thing? But it wasn't, you know, there's nothing up there to this day.
Have you been up, when was the last time you were kind of up the area?
Oh, it's a long time now. So I live just down towards Newport now, but my grandparents died, sort of last one died about 15 or so years ago. So I go up occasionally, drive up to the area. Actually on that spot would be some time ago, but you know, I'm pretty confident it hasn't changed in a long time, you know.
When you get a chance, if you can draw us a sketch of what you saw.
Yeah.
Obviously, you probably ain't going to find the original drawing, but, you know, just what you can from memory. And And if you could pinpoint it roughly where, well, hopefully exactly where, you know, actually saw it and where you were.
Yeah, I can possibly go watch up a picture from Google Maps. I know exactly where it was.
That's wonderful. I know we can kind of class as an explain, but what do you kind of think it was?
Do you know what? I don't, my gut tells me it's, there's only really two options for me. It's either some sort of military, you know, secret military aircraft that for some reason needed to put down there and take back off, or it was, you know, as we'd say, a UFO. Because I've got no other rational reason or tangible thing I can say, I think it's that. So I know, I'm not well sure what account it is. It's one from America where a guy's going somewhere like Nevada or somewhere like that neck of the woods, going along a sort of remote road, and something lands in front of him and he sees a couple of people in overalls sort of get out and run around and then take off. I always thought when I heard that one that was sort of possibly similar. But what I saw, sort of the person coming over the ridge, you know, just looked strange. Even though I'd been in the military in the past, it had no look to anything military I've been sort of seeing myself.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Yeah, that was Socorro, I think you're thinking of.
Right, yeah, that's right. Yeah, but even that was a little boat. I think the guy sort of says that it was, he sort of didn't see sort of overalls or some sort of flight suit type sort of description, but this was just nowhere near that. What struck me, it was like a large build, even though I appreciate I was a kid, but I still think now it's a large build, and just the clean lines of it, of the silhouette, if that makes sense. So if you or I stood in there on a cold night with a jacket and jeans on, you'd see that sort of silhouette, wouldn't you? But this was like very uniform and regimented.
I see, right, yeah. I mean, Wales is quite a popular tourist place for UFO, yeah. So may well be.
Yeah, I really know, and I said, you know, and I think when we chatted an email, is the episode of the guy in the Bering Mountains, the farmer in the 70s, you know, that's been on TV as well, hasn't it? I think on one of the programs where he sees that sort of intense light in the copse of woods down on further across the valley. And that sort of, the way he describes that light is very similar to, I think, what I saw. And that was a few years before. I think that was 74.
Yeah, it was very recent. Yeah, it was very recent between it.
Yeah, but that description, which I'm not sure if it was Ancient Aliens or one of those programs put it on, but that way he describes that intense white blue light behind a tree, that's the sort of closest description to light of you know, to what I saw. Albeit he's nowhere near me in Wales, but worldwide, you know, it's not a million miles away. It's probably 100 miles north.
So any listeners out there in the South Wales area, get in contact.
Yeah, it's an interesting sort of event, which is, as I said, it's always stuck in my mind.
It always will.
Yeah, you're right. And it's nice to be able to share it, actually, and, you know, listen to your show, the events that people have witnessed or been part of, you know. Why would we all make this up? To what end?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm very lucky. I get predominantly good reviews for the show. The people that contact me are just normal, everyday people. People just want to share this. You know, so there's no reason why, you know, people are going to lie. You can, of course, you can never say 100% that someone's going to, you know, contact you and they've just completely made up story. You know, people are very complex human beings in any case, you know. But
Yeah. They might want a bit of attention seeking because there's a lot of shows about the topic on at the moment or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. But generally, you know, I mean, I'm pretty confident that just about everyone I've had on, they're telling the truth. And even if what they experienced wasn't what they think it is, you know, it's still something.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I agree.
That's wonderful, Gareth.
Well, it's a pleasure. No worries. So I said I can sort of relive it in my mind. So it's not difficult to sort of recount it, I guess.
I mean, yeah. I mean, it's quite a while ago, mind.
Yeah, it is. 40 years ago. Yeah.
Well, Gareth, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing it all for our listeners.
No, it was a pleasure. No, a pleasure, Nick. Enjoyed it.
Wonderful. All right.
Thanks, Nick.
You have a great evening, okay? And I'll talk to you soon. All right. Take care, Gareth.
Yeah, cheers, Nick.
Introducing the High Strangeness Coffee Blend by Redacted Coffee Company, a medium roast of the Brazilian kind. This medium roast offers flavors of chocolate and vanilla combined with a distinct fruity taste and a unique sweet floral aroma. The experience of High Strangeness doesn't end there, with a sweet butter aftertaste that doesn't fade as your coffee cools. This coffee regains its flavors all the way through your cup, ensuring it truly is good to the last drop. The veteran-funded, employee-owned Redacted Coffee Company and UFO Chronicles podcast have partnered together to bring you the best coffee on and off the planet. Get 20% off your first order now at redactedcoffee.com/UFO. That's redactedcoffee.com/UFO. Or follow the link below in this episode's description or click on the banner of my website. This podcast is fueled by coffee oozing high strangeness. So what are you waiting for? Wake up to the strange. Hello, Paul. Good morning and welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Nick.
Calling from Cambridgeshire in the UK this morning.
Yes, yeah.
Wonderful. Your first UFO experience occurred in 1978?
Yeah, that's right. Age 14, yeah.
Age 14, wonderful. Okay, would you like to start there for us, please, Paul?
Yeah, sure. So, yeah, it was a Saturday, if I remember correctly, because I was at home, and I think I was at home alone. I had four sisters and brothers, like, so it was five of us, plus mum and dad, seven of us at home. But it was a Saturday afternoon, blue skies, warm day. I can't remember exactly what month or day it was, but I know it was a Saturday because I come downstairs and I was going to watch the Pink Panther show, which was on, and I used to quite like then. So I came downstairs, put a telly on. There was nobody in that room. There might have been one of my sisters upstairs, but there was nobody around. So we had a sort of long living room, which has your dining room as you come in. Then there was a room divider, and then there was a living room with a TV in the corner. We had a sofa across the back window that looked out over the back garden and across over the fence and trees. And I was sort of sat there. I put the TV on and was waiting for this show to come on. And I looked out of the window. As I say, it was a clear blue sky. And out above the trees, must have been quite low, because this thing was quite big, was this, all I can say, is a craft. It was silver, and the shape of it that I could see was like a cigar shape. So, and when I say cigar shape, it was rounded at both ends. It wasn't cut off one end to smoke. It was a rounded shape on both ends. But for some reason, that's what I saw, but I know it was a disc shape. So I think I was seeing it flat on the side. I don't know why I know it was a disc shape, but I just seemed to know that it was a disc. But anyway, this ship was up there. It wasn't moving at all. It was just sitting there. And I was sort of really drawn to it and mesmerised by this, looking at this. And I could feel myself having to sort of pull myself away while I was looking at it. I had to really sort of make an effort to sort of turn my head away from this and stop looking at it. And I did manage to do that. And I looked back and I saw that the show was just getting ready to start. And so I thought, well, I'll just look back thinking this thing will be gone. And it wasn't. It was still there. And so, again, I was drawn to this. So I can't believe that I looked at it for this amount of time. But when I then tried to look back at the TV, the show had finished. There was another show on. I don't know what it was, maybe the news or something. But it had gone. And this show was at least half an hour long. And that was well gone. And I looked at the clock and almost an hour had gone. Now, I can't remember looking at this thing for an hour or feeling that I'd sat there just sort of, you know, in a trance looking at this thing. I don't know what happened. I was 14 at the time. I didn't know what experiences was and lost time or really anything about UFOs. I'd heard the word, obviously, UFO, and knew about, you know, spaceships and all that, but I didn't really know anything about it. I didn't know what a grey was or anything like that. So for me, it was a bit curious, and I can remember walking through to the kitchen and checking the clock, because I thought maybe the clock was wrong, but the clock was the same in the kitchen, and I always thought, like, that's really, really strange. But just sort of moved on with it, sort of thing. Didn't say anything to anyone because I thought they'd all think I'm barking mad at 14. And so just sort of left that as the experience it was. And then sort of a couple of weeks later, I'd gone to bed and I woke up. I didn't share my room. I had my own room. And I woke up and I could not move. I was sleep paralysis, whatever you call it. I was glued to the bed. The only thing I could move was my eyeballs. And to the side of me, as I looked to the side of me, I could see this figure in the upstairs landing just outside my bedroom. The door was open, but I couldn't see who or what it was. But I somehow realised it wasn't anybody from the house. It wasn't my family, sisters or my mum and dad. So I was a bit nervous because obviously I couldn't move and I could see this figure and I was wondering what was going on. And then the next thing, I was at the top of the stairs
I was out of bed and I was at the top of these stairs, and at the bottom of the stairs was this figure. Now, then at 14, I had no idea what this was. I was just really, really scared. I was really frightened, not knowing what this was. I know that it was a grey now, because when I saw a picture of a grey sometime later, I realised it straight away took me to that memory. And this thing was at the bottom of the stairs and it was beckoning me to come down the stairs. And I thought it wanted me to jump, because I can remember not saying anything, but thinking, I'm going to hurt myself, I'm going to break my legs if I try and jump down here. And this thing was saying to me, don't worry, you're fine, you're safe, you're okay, don't be afraid. And then I came downstairs, but I didn't walk. It was like I was just floating down the stairs. And I got to the bottom of the stairs, and this this thing was right by the front door. And as you got to the bottom of the stairs, on your left was the living room, dining room area. I could hear the TV on, so my parents were still up. I could hear the TV on, and I could hear some talking, whether it was my parents or the TV, I'm not sure, but I could hear some muffled voices because it was right down the other end of the room. I could hear that clearly. And then I was outside of the house. I'd gone out, I don't remember the doors opening, I've gone outside the house and I can see the sky. And then from that moment, I don't remember anything else after that. I woke up the next morning and I was in bed. I felt I got up and I sort of, touched myself, felt myself just, I'm all there and all pieces and all was okay. I didn't feel ill. I felt a bit tired, a bit disheveled, if you like. But yeah, I don't really know what happened there. It wasn't a dream. I was wide awake for sure. But that was the one time I was quite scared and quite nervous about it. And then sort of after that, I started to notice that I had the almost like a sixth sense, I suppose, an ability. I could, and I'll go into this in more details in a minute, but I had this ability to sense things, especially with people. So I could sense people that were not good. So the hairs would go on the back of my neck. And sometimes I would get this message in my head. Now, when I say message, can't say it was voices, but it was like a message would come and say to me, this is not good. Back away from these people, whatever. And I'll explain as I say a little bit more as I go along. But I could also sort of sense when someone was pregnant. It was things like that was just more intuitive that I hadn't noticed before. And this continued for a long time in my life, certainly up and through into my 20s. This time I was 14, but this carried on through into my 20s and 30s. And it has come back a little bit over time. But as an example, I can tell you when I was sort of 14, 15, I had a friend who had made friends with a couple of lads who were twins, and they lived up in a home just at the back of our house, about 10 minutes walk. And these guys, as soon as I met them, the hairs on the back of my head, the skin started to crawl. I didn't like them. And this message came in my head, just stay away. Don't go near these guys, stay away. And when we came away, I said to my mate, I didn't have a good feeling about them, I don't think they're right. And they're all right. And anyway, cut a long story short, a couple of months later, they were gone. And my mate, I didn't go and hang around with them anymore. My mate said, oh, they've gone. I think if I remember rightly, they stabbed somebody up in that hostel and they'd gone to a portal. But they did something that was not good. I can't exactly remember what, but they certainly hurt somebody up there. And he'd said to me afterwards, yeah, they were a bit crazy, they were a bit nutty, and so I thought, oh right, okay, so this thing is definitely something to take notice of. And so I've had smaller things happen with that. And then moving on to sort of 1981, I got a job as an apprentice chef in London. So I moved up to London, lived in the staff accommodation, and I trained as a chef. I was at one of the big four-star, five-star hotels in London. And so I was it was 81. So I was off this day in the morning. It was a weekend. And again, it was a sunny day. And I was getting ready to go to work and have something to eat, because we could use a cafeteria because we were in the staff accommodation, and then start work in the afternoon. I normally went home for the weekend. But on this weekend, they offered us some overtime to earn a bit more money. So I decided to stay. And I got ready and I went to go out and leave. I said to my mates, I'm off and to work and have something to eat. And so I came out of the house. We lived on a square. This was in near Hyde Park. It was can't remember the name of the address now, but it was a square, and it went in a U-shape. So you came in, you could come in either way, you went round and you come out the square the other side back onto the main road. And in the middle was a sort of garden which was for the use of the people there, and there was trees and that. It was all very sort of enclosed, so it was quite private. So I came out, started walking down the street, and straight away this message came in my head for me to stop walking. And I stopped walking and thought that's strange. And I looked around and I couldn't see anyone. It was a nice day. It was very quiet. I looked behind me, nothing. Couldn't see anybody through trees or bushes in the park. Couldn't see any sort of danger or anything like that. And so I started walking again. And again, this message said, stop walking. And I stopped again, looked around. And just at that point, so I was about to start walking again, these two lads came up to the corner, looked down the street, and then started coming down towards me. And they looked, you know, they're probably in their early 20s, you know, dressed for the day, didn't look anything unusual to them, just a couple of lads. And they were chatting, hands in their pockets, their jackets on. And so I sort of looked, didn't feel anything at that point. And then I took one or two steps, and this message came in my head, run, just run. And it was almost like it was in capital letters. It came in my head really powerful. And it was like, run. And I stopped walking again, and I looked at these two guys, and I sort of caught one of the eyes of these two guys. And as soon as I caught that, the skin on my neck crawled, and, you know, hairs went up on the back of my head. And I was like, what's going on here, sort of thing. And I thought, right, so I thought, right, I'll turn around. So I turned around and started walking back to the accommodation. Obviously, I hadn't gone too far. So I just then took a brief look over my shoulder, and both of these guys were running full pelt towards me, and both of them had these huge hunting knives. I think you call them Bowie knives or something like that, but they had these huge knives on them. And I was like, holy, you know, what's going on here, sort of thing. And just ran. I just ran, and I managed to get upstairs, you know, get my keys in the door and get on the other side of the door before they got to the bottom of the stairs. And I've never seen these guys before in my life. I don't know who they were. I think, I mean, from their intentions, they were going to kill me, I think. I'm pretty sure of that. But, yeah, I'd never seen them before. And closed the door, shouted up to a couple of friends who were in, and they came running downstairs. What's going on? Like, I explained to them, there's two guys out there with knives. They're trying to stab me, kill me, or whatever. Like, right, one of my mates ran up and got a couple of golf clubs he had in his room and a bit of bravado. But anyway, I said, look, you know, we left it a couple of minutes. Then we sort of looked out the windows, couldn't see anyone. We opened the doors and looked out, and couldn't see anyone anywhere. The street was empty. So my mate, he had a car, little Fiat one, and he said, come on, jump in the car, and it was only a 5 minute walk around the corner. He said, I'll drop you around there and we'll see if we can see them. But never saw them again. We went around in the car and we had a little sort of drive around the streets before we went straight to work and couldn't see anyone anywhere. These guys have gone. Very, very bizarre. I mean, I've never forgot that to this day. And that sort of reaffirmed to me, you know, these messages that were coming. I can't tell you why I'm getting these messages. I don't think I'm special or anything like that. But that definitely saved my life that day. There's no doubt about that. For what reason, I can't tell you. I went to work, and I know for months afterwards, whenever I was out, my eyes were scanning, you know, the streets for these two faces, because I won't forget them. But I never saw them, never happened again, never came across them. I have no idea why or what. I think maybe they were out just to hurt someone and stumbled across me. But as I say, I can't explain, you know, how or why that worked and how those messages came, but it saved my life that day. There's no doubt about it. And then, I mean, I've had other experiences, not so quite as dramatic as that, thank God. But then there was another incident which moves on to 1987, and I was working as a chef again. I was at a different job by this time, and this job worked sort of 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, because I wanted a bit more time for myself working in hotels. Obviously, it's long hours. And I was working overtime, so we would normally finish around 4 or 5 o'clock, but I won't say company names. This is a big company, and they sponsored a lot of sporting events, and some were televised and that, and they had the facilities to lay these on. So we would get asked when these were on to do overtime and work on these, and I was working on one of these events that night, and would normally finish any time, depends. What I would do was me and a couple of other guys would do all the preparation, get it all ready, and then the chef would send us home. He wouldn't keep us all there. Once that's done, he would say, fine, he would just keep some waiters there and himself and maybe one other, and they would then just distribute the food out once the ceremony was over. And I got this message in my head to say, leave work. You need to leave work now and go home. And I couldn't say why. I didn't have a feeling that anything was bad or anything like that. A bit like when the one story I just told you, that at the beginning I didn't think there was anything bad, but this was very adamant. I needed to leave work now and go home. And so it wasn't far off my finishing time, to be fair. So I went to the chef and said, look, can I nip off? I'm feeling tired. You know, everything's pretty much done. And he looked at the watch and said, no problem. So he let me go a little bit early, I think 15 minutes early or something like that. So I got dressed, got changed, got on a tube, took the tube went to King's Cross where I lived. I lived between King's Cross and Camden Town and would walk up York Way. So I got off the tube and was halfway up York Way. And then I start hearing all these blue lights going, and it was a lot. It just got louder and louder because obviously more and more vehicles were going to King's Cross. And obviously this was the night of the fire at King's Cross where a lot of people lost their lives in the underground. And I didn't know this at the time. Obviously I got up home, could still hear these blue lights going around through the night. I got home, had a shower, had a cup of tea, put the telly on, and then of course it was all on the news. It was breaking news. Now I can't say for definite that that saved my life, but certainly it's very strange that I got this message to go home immediately and get out of there. And I sort of by sort of 5 minutes I missed this incident. So yeah, I have no other reason to think that that's what it was, because I only get these messages when things looks like I'm in danger with things. But so that sort of messages in the head has been, they're the two sort of main instances that I can say have changed maybe my life a bit, and certainly made me sit up and think. And there's been smaller just other things, but I'll move on then to 1992, which was my next sort of sightings of a UFO in Scotland. So I was living just outside Edinburgh. I'd been up there a couple of years and I was working as a chef there, and I was out, gone to the cinema with three other people. And it was quite late. We'd gone to quite a late showing. So it was about 11, 11.30. We'd had something to eat afterwards. And we were on our way back along the main bypass just outside Edinburgh. And the four of us on this occasion, so I wasn't on my own, saw these orbs in the sky, sort of near the Pentland Hills. So I would say they were above the Pentland Hills. And there were several of them, I think, you know, probably seven or eight of these orbs. And they were sort of, well, I'd say, dancing around in the sky, moving between each other and sort of doing figures of eight. They were quite large. I mean, they were, I suppose, a bit bigger than a tennis ball. They were silver. They were like a whitey silver. They didn't come any bigger or closer to us, but we spent a good, we was there for quite a while. I mean, difficult sometimes to think time, but I would say at least 10, 15 minutes. We were all in awe of seeing these orbs and seeing them and watching them dance around in the sky, to the point where, you know, I was quite happy to stand there and watch them until they disappeared. But the others weren't so. I mean, we had an elderly woman in there who had been with us, and she wanted to get home, and it was bloody cold because of Scotland. It was in the winter time, and so we ended up just leaving. And I don't know why, but I should have looked to see if there was anything in the news, because I can't believe if we saw them that nobody else did. It's quite possible that other people saw them, but I can't explain what that was. And I've seen similar sorts of, I suppose, UFOs or unexplained lights, orbs, since then as well. But that was the only one that I've had that I can say was witnessed. And after that, I lived in a village just outside Edinburgh, and there were several occasions where, there was one occasion where I woke up in my room, I thought it was headlights to a car, but the road ran alongside my apartment rather than towards it. So I never got headlights in the windows, but it wasn't, my room was lit up really, really bright white light. I mean, I remember putting my hands over my eyes, but it didn't seem to do anything. The light seemed to come through my fingers. And I don't remember anything after that. But the next day I woke up and I was curled up in the fetal position in the bathroom next to my bedroom. If I remember rightly, I don't think I had any pajamas on or anything. I think I wore t-shirts and shorts to bed, but I didn't have anything on, which was bizarre. I've never done sleepwalking. I've never had any experiences with that. And, you know, I've lived most of my life with other people. I've not often been on my own. And there's never been any instances as a child or growing up or even through my marriage for 20 years with my wife or any other partners I've lived with that I've ever sleepwalked. So that was bizarre. And that happened on two or three occasions where I actually, for some reason, woke up in a different room, not in the bedroom where I went to bed, and can't explain it. It is possible that I was sleepwalking, but why I would get into the bath and sleep and take my clothes off, I don't know. But I've never done that before, and never since, or anything like that. But and that was not long after I saw those orbs in Scotland. So that was a little bit bizarre. So then, sort of moving on from there, we come to sort of a period now, sort of, I suppose, you know, a number of years later, whereby I've not had any sort of UFO experiences for a long time. And I got married, I got three kids, and not really had anything since that period of time until we come to what was last year in October. And I go out most nights, I walk my dog, as I said to you. And I came out into the east. I know sort of the stars and constellations and where they all should be. Just caught my eye in the east, these two, what I thought were stars at first. And then I realised they were moving. And they got a bit bigger and were certainly larger than your normal star, but I couldn't see them. They weren't big enough to say they were a craft, or they looked like these orbs again to me, but they were a bit smaller than the ones I saw in Scotland. And again, they were dancing around. They were doing sort of figure of eights. And on this first occasion, the two of them then joined together. So they collided, if you like, with each other, or came together and became one. It didn't get any bigger, didn't get any brighter. It stayed as it was. But one, when they went as one, that was it. I never saw two of them again. And then the one that was there disappeared, just disappeared into the night. So that was bizarre. But then I came out the next day, not exactly the same time, but a similar time. I normally walk the dog between 7 and 9 most nights. So it would have been between that sort of period of time. And there they were again, in exactly the same spot up to the east and doing the same sort of thing. On this occasion, I watched them. They didn't come together as one. They just danced around each other and were moving around in the night sky. They were slightly bigger this time than the day before, so I assume they were a bit closer. Again, they then both just disappeared off together, and I didn't see them again then for a couple of weeks. So after those two instances, it was probably a week or two later I was coming back, and I hadn't seen, and I'm, you know, like a lot of experiences, I'm eyes to the sky. As soon as I go out, I look up, see if it's a clear sky, see if there's anything there. And so I do look for these things, I suppose, but hadn't seen anything. I was coming home. We'd done our walk, and it was a pretty clear night. There was no low cloud or anything like that. As I approached my house, I come in through what we call the gate, side gate. We've got a front door or side gate, and the side gate takes you into the back door, or you can go down the side of the house and into the garden. So I would always come in through the side gate into the house with a dog, and that was us done with our walk. But on this night, and this is the first time I've had a message in a long time that I can remember, I got a message in my head saying go to the back garden, and I just walked straight there. I closed the gate, walked straight there with Maddie the dog, and above my house, I mean, I was in shock. Above the house was this huge craft. I mean, I couldn't see it all, but it was huge. The front of it or one end of it that I could see, the rest of it seemed to be cloaked, because I couldn't see. As I moved into the garden, I couldn't see anymore. It was like it was just, I don't know, in a cloud or I don't know what it was, but I have to assume, thinking about it, it was somehow cloaked, because I think this was just for me to see above the house. And it was almost like hi, we're here. I don't get scared about these things. I can't say I was scared, but I was really shaken that this thing was so close to the house. I mean, it was literally just above the house. It was that close that I shone my torch on it. I always carry a torch at night time, and I shone my torch on it, and I got no reflection from it. It seemed to absorb the light. It stayed there for a number of seconds, and I got different settings on my torch. So I put it on strobe light, and as soon as I did that, it just moved up and disappeared. Now, you know, when I walked into the front of the house to come into the garden, there was nothing above the house. It was just normal. And this thing was that big, you know, I would have seen it coming in. So I really don't understand that. But obviously, if they've got technology, they were cloaking it in some way. And so I was totally shocked. I mean, that shock that I went in and spoke to my wife about it and said, look, I've just seen this. She knew I'd seen these other sort of unexplained UFOs on the previous week that were dancing in the sky, that I said. And so I'd said to her, your friends are back. I said, it looks like it. But then she could see that I was a bit shaken up having seen this one right above the house. And it sort of unnerved me a little bit. But, you know, okay. I mean, you know, I think you don't know until you get it on the day. But I think if one of these stood in my garden and said hi, I wouldn't run. I would want to know, because for years, I want to know why did I get these messages? What was it for? You know, but I have no idea. So anyway, I told my wife straight away. We didn't say anything to the kids, and I hadn't told my story to the children or to my wife, to be fair, not this full story. I'd spoke to them about seeing UFOs, but I hadn't told them the complete picture of all the other things that had gone on in my life. And so we don't want to spook the kids. But a couple of days later, 2 days after that, I was upstairs, me and my wife, and we were talking about it again. And my son came in the room. He's 18 years old. And I just said to him, oh, you haven't had any strange things going on or seen anything strange and what have you? He said, two nights ago, he said, I thought Cartier was in my room. He said, somebody ran, someone or something ran across my bedroom. He said, and it just disappeared. And I just thought, and I went back to sleep. He said, I just thought it was Katia, who's my youngest daughter. It wasn't her. She was sleeping that night and she doesn't sleepwalk. None of the kids sleepwalk or anything like that. And it wasn't her. That was a little bit unnerving because obviously, you know, I know a lot of people on your show have said where they've had experiences, their parents or their children also get experiences. So, but I can't say anything bad has happened to me. In some ways, I've had some good things that have kept me alive. So I don't know what that was. I can't say for sure. But yeah, that sort of unnerved me a little bit. So I then thought, right, okay. So they've sort of shown their face to me. They've come above the house and shown this craft to me. I can't say why, just to say, yeah, look, we are here. You know, we are back or whatever.
Are you intrigued by Paranormal Talk Radio? You'll love the new Paranormal Radio app from TalkStream Live. You'll find a great selection of talk shows covering UFOs, ghosts, strange phenomena, and much more. Download the Paranormal Radio app now and start listening to the very best in paranormal talk entertainment, including the network you're listening to right now, the Paranormal Radio app, free in Google Play and the iOS App Store.
Nothing happened again. That was sort of November time. And then in December, just before Christmas, I was out walking Maddie. And we were coming towards, again, the end of the walk and looking across to the west, going west out into the sky. I then saw this craft. It was very, very silver. It wasn't very big. It wasn't as big as the one that I saw when I was 14. It was much smaller, so obviously much further away. Very silver, and it was moving very slowly, and it was sort of circling, I suppose, just seemed to be staying in one place, but just sort of moving in a small circle around, and then it stopped. And so I watched this and I was looking at it and I was thinking, OK, what's it going to do? Is it going to come towards me? And it just shot off in the sky. And I've seen videos of these things going straight up in the air on a blink of an eye. But this one went off at, I don't know, 60 degrees, 70 degrees. It went off at an angle into space. And when it went fast, but it went and left this real solid silver line behind it, and it looked absolutely beautiful. I've never seen it. I've seen shooting stars. It wasn't nothing like that. This was amazing. And when it went and disappeared, I was standing there, and this euphoria came over me. I don't know where it came from. I just felt so euphoric, so lifted, so light, and so happy as well. And I was like, and I couldn't say why. I was thinking to myself, what's the matter with you? You know, why has this come over you? And it went off into the sky, and that's the last experience I've had since before Christmas. I go out walking most nights when I can with my dog, and I haven't seen anything else since then. And that's really the sort of story of my experiences with UFOs.
When it comes to these intuition, sixth sense that you obviously exhibit,
yeah,
do you still have that now? Like when you said you could tell when someone's pregnant?
Yeah, not so much, no. I mean, as I say, when I was younger, I could definitely go in a room. I mean, I can remember going in a room one time and the partner I was with at the time in my 20s and saying, oh, she's pregnant. And she didn't look pregnant, but I said, oh, she's pregnant. Obviously, I'd said hello to her, kissed her cheek, and they were friends and that. And I come, as I stepped away, I was like, oh, you know, my partner at the time, my girlfriend at the time, said, oh, she's not said nothing. I don't think so. It's okay. And then a couple of weeks later, She told my partner, yeah, she didn't know he was just part. I said to her, did you know a couple of weeks ago? She went, no, I've just found out this week. And she was like, that's happened, you know, that sort of thing has happened on several occasions. But that was all in my 20s and 30s. I can't say I've picked up on that. I've been in contact with people that have made me think I don't want to know this person. They put their hairs up on the back of my head and know there's something wrong. So I've stayed away, I've shied away from whether that's somebody who I've met through friends or a party or, you know, through work or whatever. I come into contact with people and I can still get that feeling. That definitely I can still, if I get a sense that someone's not right, the hairs on the back of my head will go up. I'll just stay away from them and say, right. And if it's somebody that's around my family, I'll just say, you stay away from them. Just, you know, not even contact with them. And, you know, my wife knows about that sort of thing. I just got about it. And I have had it that I've got up before with doing something and this has come, either it come in my head or I've had this bad feeling that something's not right and I won't go. I'll say to my wife, we're not going today. We'll do it another day. And I've just not, you know, I've changed my plans just because of that. But I can't say in the last sort of 10, 15 years I've had it. Since I've been married and had kids, I can't say I've had a lot, if any, sort of main experiences or anything like that. It's been nothing really, which was a surprise when it started happening, this sort of last sort of few months. Instead of just being the one, I expected just to be the one. I had a series of them. But yeah, I mean, I don't know how it works. And again, you know, I'm sure a lot of people who have had this, you ask the question, when that incident happened with those two guys with the knives, you know, I was asking myself, why me? You know, why? If someone's keeping me alive, should we say, because that's what it looked like, if they're not wanting me to be killed, for what purpose is it? You know, I wasn't that great at school. You know, I did school and I enjoyed school, but I wasn't very academic. I wanted to be a chef and I knew that for a while. And, you know, I pursued that career and worked hard and did really well. You know, I've worked with the royal family. I've worked with a lot of stars and met a lot of people. I've had a great life from it. As I said to you, I've worked abroad and travelled and, you know, I've had a pretty good life and quite in some ways unusual in some of the places that I've been and worked, and I've enjoyed every minute of it. I've always tried to look for jobs when I've decided I want to move for something that's completely different to what I'm doing. I'll still be a chef, but a different sort of environment. The job's the same, but the environment doesn't need to be. So I didn't never really, once I became a head chef and an executive chef, I never wanted to really move from one hotel to another because the jobs is exactly the same. The environment's slightly different, but pretty much the same. So, you know, I moved, as I said to you, I moved abroad to get some experience. I worked in Russia, worked in France, worked in the Middle East and in Asia. So to get those experiences and sort of, you know, take myself out of a comfort zone as well. So, and in those times, I can't think that anything sort of jumps out like some of those sort of main stories do.
I mean, of course, you should always go by your gut feeling. I'm a firm believer in that. But but to me, this is a little bit more than that, you know, because those messages, intuition that you had, you know, it got you out of quite a serious scrape.
Twice there, it got me out of a serious situation. And I say, you have to ask yourself, well, for what purpose? I mean, I haven't done anything in my life that I haven't invented something that's been great for the world and I haven't, you know, saved anybody. I don't know, maybe it's to come. Who knows? There must be a reason for it. You know, there's got to be some sort of reason behind it, but I don't know what it is.
Well, whether it, you know, it directly came from you or it came from an outside source.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it came from me. I don't think those messages, it was like, I suppose, telepathy more than anything. It wasn't a conversation. I wasn't talking to them. These messages were coming from into my head from somewhere. They weren't coming from within me. This was coming from some external source of this message is being put into my head. Do this and do it now sort of thing. You're in danger. It wasn't coming from me. I'm 100% certain on that.
And it was like in capital letters.
When I didn't move, I mean, it wasn't always, but on that instance, when it said stop and I started and I kept going, and when it was like, right, this is dangerous, that it was like almost it sort of banged into my head sort of thing. I mean, it's difficult to describe it. I mean, I would say it was like it was shouting, but it wasn't a voice, if you know what I mean. It was like, you know, when someone's angry, they write in capital letters as if they're shouting. I used to have a manager who would send it in capital letters when he was angry about something. And you say, oh, you're always shouting on the computer. It was a bit like that. It sort of came in big letters, you know, run. But very strange. I don't know. Can't sort of, you know, quantify it really.
I wonder if anything actually happened, you know, that night to anyone else.
That I don't know. I mean, in London, I mean, I say I was what, 16, 17 at the time. I didn't think to sort of look or, you know, look at the news or see. I didn't think like that. I went to work and busy. And then, you know, as I say, I kept looking around at the streets after that, because I thought, oh, maybe these people had spotted me and were picking on me for a reason. You know, maybe they live around a corner. And I don't know, like, you know, I just couldn't quantify it. But I certainly kept an eye out for them in the ensuing weeks, as it were. But say nothing ever happened like that again. Thank God, you know, to me. I mean, I've been in scrapes and that, and nothing's happened to stop me being in them. But you know, I've not been hurt. I mean, I've been in a couple of minor car accidents, but say nothing that was life-threatening, or not been in any real sort of, I would say, life-threatening situations where I haven't had those messages and I've gone into a life-threatening situation. Nothing like that, you know. It's all, my life's been pretty boring, really.
Well, I wouldn't say that. You've been to Mongolia as well.
Yeah, I mean, as I say, I went abroad and through various people who I've worked with, one of my old bosses went out there, and then he asked me to come and join him, and we worked on gold and copper mine in Mongolia. By this time, I'd sort of moved away from the kitchen. When I was in the Middle East, I moved from the kitchen into operations, and then never looked back from that either, and sort of become an operations manager and a regional manager. And then in Mongolia, I managed all the operations in the country, but the main one was in the Gobi Desert. And there, you know, you've got huge skies. It's a bit like some of your friends from America that talk about stargazing, and they got these big open skies. Well, that was what Mongolia was like. Never saw anything. I mean, I would sit out there and look at the stars and think, oh, you know, we're going to see something. It's such a huge expanse and that, but see shooting stars and what have you, but nothing else. No, it was see anything there. But yeah, I've travelled around and not had any experiences when I was abroad. No, nothing like that.
Yeah, you've had an interest in life. You know,
yeah.
I've always said, you know, travelling is the best thing you can do.
Definitely, yeah. I gave my kids the bug. They both, you know, they're going to uni, my two eldest, and they want to work abroad and do the same thing. It gave them a real bug for it, so it's good. I think it expands the mind and expands tolerance and all those sort of things, you know, learning new cultures and meeting different people. And, you know, that's what life's about. Life's about experiences for me. It's not about possessions or that sort of thing. It's about making experiences.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Wonderful. Okay. Just going back to your experience in 1978, all right?
Yeah.
So you saw this disc object.
Yeah. It looked like, well, from my vision, it was a cigar shape, but I think I was seeing it straight on because it never moved. While I was looking, it never moved. But for some reason, I don't know why, I can see also a disc in my head. I don't know why that is, because I didn't see it like that. I saw it when I visually looked at it as a cigar shape. And it was quite big, solid silver. It looked like one piece of metal. Because it was quite low, as I say, it was quite large. It was a blue sky, no clouds. It was a very clear visibility. And, very silver. And just it looked like one that I couldn't see any sort of lines or rivets or marks on there to say that it had been put together. It looked like one piece of metal. No wings, no exteriors, no jet flumes or anything like that. It was like someone had it on a piece of string hanging there and it just wasn't moving.
I mean, obviously, it was a long time ago, and I was barely 1 year old then. But when you're watching the Pink Panther show, which was a good show, I used to enjoy that. You looked at the TV.
Yeah, and the show was just starting.
The show was just starting.
Yeah, it was just starting. I can remember having to pull myself away from looking at this thing. I can remember thinking, I need to stop looking at this. And I sort of, you know, pulled my head away and turned to the TV, and the show was just starting. And so the credits were coming up, and I was like, right. And then I suddenly thought, right, let's look back at it. And I expected it to be gone, to be honest with you. I thought, I'll look back, and I probably just imagined it. And I looked back, and it was still there. It hadn't moved. It had not moved. And then it seemed to me to be just, again, a couple of minutes. And I was thinking, right, I've got to stop looking at this thing. And I turned my head back, and the Pink Panther show was not on anymore. I can't remember what was on, but I remember looking at that and thinking, oh, you know, did I turn the telly over? And I looked, it was on, I mean, there was no remote controls then, but it was on the right channel. I can't remember what was on now, but it wasn't the Pink Panther show. I think it might have been the news or something was on. And I was like, oh, and then I looked at the clock. And as I say, I think about an hour had gone, sort of maybe a little bit less than that. But I think the show was half an hour long for sure at that time. So it was definitely more than half an hour, but I don't think it was any more than an hour. And I looked at the clock and I was like, and I thought, oh, the clock must have stopped or there's something wrong here. And I did feel that something was wrong. I then turned the telly off and went out into the kitchen to check the clock there. And the clock there was the same time. And I was like, oh, I was 14. I'd never experienced anything like that. And I was like, that's bizarre. And I thought, have I sat there and just stared at that thing for nearly an hour? I can't believe I would do that. But I don't remember an hour going. It felt to me as if when I pulled my head away, it had just been a couple of minutes staring at this thing. But I don't remember anything. I just know that an hour had gone past. And I'd never, it's only sort of later as you start to get internet and start to see these things and start to learn that, oh, you know, people have missing time. And, you know, you watch movies like Fire in the Sky and then, you know, stuff like that when people have gone, you know, for longer times than that. And I'm thinking, oh, bloody hell. And I had the memory of what happened when I was in bed. Bizarre. Yeah, can't explain it.
It may have been the Banana Splits that was on. That was about that kind of time.
Yeah. I mean, it was definitely the afternoon time. It was definitely sort of, I'd say maybe 5 o'clock time, something like that. I think it was around about that sort of time in the afternoon. It was sort of late afternoon time. Definitely the Pink Panther was on, I'm sure it was on in the evening, but I could be getting confused. It was a long time ago.
And after you turn to the TV and you realise the show had finished, did you recall seeing the object after that?
No, I don't. I took my head away. Well, pulled my head away, and when I come back, that was it, and it wasn't there. And no, it wasn't. It wasn't there. No, definitely not. It had gone. I can't explain it. I mean, at 14 and in 78, didn't have the internet, so you didn't have all that information of what's going on in the world. And I'd never heard of anybody having an experience, certainly not, around this area, or anyone who brought that subject up. As only as I got a little bit older and you get at parties and someone brings a subject up and said, "Oh, I experienced this," and anybody, "Oh yeah, I saw one," and people there, the people that have seen it and or had experience tend to, "Oh right," and you tell them your story, the others laugh and not interested, sort of thing, like, as I'm sure everybody's experienced. So I certainly, with the other stuff, I haven't told anyone about that because I didn't want people thinking that I was crazy. And I think, as you get older, care less about it. And certainly, having listened to various podcasts, and I've listened to yours and the experiences of people, I think that makes you feel, there's other people who have gone through even bigger things, I think, than what I've done. I mean, and stranger than what I've experienced, and people that have memories of, going and being taken and what have you. So good or bad, I haven't had that. So probably good in some experiences. But that sort of helps. And certainly, so I listen to your podcast, and I listen to a couple of other ones as well. And some very, very interesting stories there. And I think, as other listeners and people who have been on your show have said, it's helped them to sort of put their story out there. And that's all it's for me, really, is to share this story. As I say, I shared it with my wife, the whole story, before I came on here. So a couple of weeks ago, she took it in her stride and was okay about it. Didn't mention it all to the kids, but we've certainly told my wife, and if the kids want to listen to it, they can listen to the story if they want. But I haven't shared it. None of my family know. I mean, my mum or my sisters or anything like that. I've never spoken to them about it. I just wanted to share it here with like-minded people, really. There's no judgment, is there?
There's no judgment. It's, it's just about sharing. That's as simple as it.
Exactly, yeah. And obviously, I've come on shows and I look on it. I've done a little bit of research, but nothing. I'm not obsessed with it or anything like that. Just to see, as I said to you, I've been ill over the last few years and just sort of looked to see if there was any connections with them. And I know with cancer there is, but this other illness I've got, I wasn't sure with ME I've got that I suffer with, whether that was connected with anyone. But it'd be interesting to see if there is. But I haven't. I saw one paper on it whereby this person had a group of experiences and a number of them were diagnosed with the same illness. So, but that's the only thing I've said. I can't say there's anything much on the internet about it, but I was just trying to put connections together and see if I can make one and one or two and three add up to 10. It's not happening.
we were talking about before the show about ME, chronic fatigue.
Yeah.
I can't quite remember the term of ME. It's quite long, isn't it?
Yeah, that's why they call it ME.
that's why it's abbreviated. If there's any listeners out there which have had experiences and do suffer ME, just shoot us an email, just kind of idea, and see if there is some kind of connection.
Yeah, because that means when I was diagnosed with it, it's not something they can actually diagnose. They have to rule everything else out before they can diagnose it, and there's no cure. So I don't really take medicine for that or anything like that. I've just got to manage my lifestyle so I don't work, as I says to you, full time. I do other things now, and I was just curious. It could be nothing, could just be a coincidence.
Now, I believe you have one more story of the paranormal. So let's head back to Scotland.
Yeah, so when I worked in Scotland, I'll sort of leave names out of it, but I worked for this hotel, really sort of good hotel up in Edinburgh. And part of my job was that I would go four times a year up to this castle, which was owned by American oil tycoons. And what they would do was they would come over for a week. They would invite guests, I suppose people associated with the oil company, but they would have people that I knew, like some MPs and senators, and they would fly in on private jets. And there's a lot of money involved, and they had this huge castle, beautiful castle up in Scotland. And I would go up there with an assistant in the kitchen, there'd be a butler, and there would be some housekeeping, and they would then double up and do waitressing and that in the evenings. And so there would be about anywhere between 15 and 20 guests there. They would come. I would provide them with breakfast, lunch, afternoon tea and dinner. So quite a lot to do through the day. So it was a full-on experience. I'd do the whole week, then go home and have 4 days off and sleep and rest from it. And as I say, we'd do this sort of 4 times a year. So this wasn't part of my contract, but it was part of what the hotel had been doing it for a long time, and the previous chefs had done it. And the wife always demanded it. It was the executive, the head chef that came and did it, that she wouldn't accept anybody else. So, you know, I had to do this role. So the first time I went up there, and it was a lovely castle, on the back of the castle, they had put an extension, which was in keeping to a degree with the castle. And that extension had a brand new kitchen. It had a delivery storage area, fridges, and, you know, all the things you needed to sort of do all this sort of level of cooking. And so it was a pretty good job. We got paid pretty well for it. Got extra money for it and that. And so the first time I went up there, we did the job, and they had a housekeeper there. And when we first arrived, we were shown a little bit of the castle, so, you know, all the sort of main areas downstairs where we would be serving food or anything like that. But they showed us some of the other areas. And then in one of the wings, we had our rooms, and we had lovely rooms, just, you know, same as to the degree what the guests had. And so we all, the boys all lived in one end, and the girls had another area at the other end. I had my own room, very nice. And so I was chatting with the housekeeper one day, and, you know, the stories come out that, you know, oh yeah, this place is haunted. You know, it was a very old castle. Story was that Rob Roy had been in prison there at one point. I don't know whether that was true or not, but that was a story people used to like to tell. But they'd gone through several housekeepers. This one had been there a couple of years, and she wasn't fazed. Obviously, this castle, like a lot of castles, had a ghost. You know, stories were that they'd been seen by the housekeepers, and some of them had left because they were too scared. But this lady had said she'd seen the ghost, but she wasn't bothered by it. And so we were like, okay, no problem. So at the back door to the kitchen, as you came out of the kitchen, you went down a little hallway. To the left, we had our lounge, which was for the staff, where we could have a coffee. There was a TV in there, and there was a toilet and bathroom shower in there. And then you go past that, and there was the door that took you out into this, what I would say, loading bay area, where we got our delivery, stored all our goods, had our fridges and all that. And so, obviously, to heat the castle was quite expensive. So most of the doors would always close. And this particular door was a very heavy door, and it was mounted so that when you opened it, you let it go, it would firmly close shut every single time. And I'm coming back one day with my hands full, and the door opens, and it opens 2 or 3 inches. I heard the click, didn't see the handle or anything move, but I heard the click, and the door just opened a couple of inches for me. And you know, I was like, oh, well, yeah. So I walked through, and I was like, that's strange. And so I went into the kitchen. I said, that's bizarre. I said, I just walked up there, and staff were like, yeah, you're seeing ghosts, you know, just sort of laughed it off. And I thought nothing of it. It didn't happen again for a day or two, and then towards the end of the visit, it happened again. So I came, and on this occasion, again, my hands were full. I had a couple of boxes in my hand, got to the door, I heard it click straight away, and the door opened a couple of inches. And you couldn't do that without actually physically doing it, because of the weight of this door and the way it was set, that it automatically closed behind you, so that, because obviously you didn't want all the air and cold to get out. And so on this occasion, I said, thank you. I just went, thank you, like that. After that, it opened every time. Whenever I come to that door with my hands full, that door opened each time for me. Didn't do it for anybody else. One of the guys who I was with at the castle one time, it didn't seem to want to do it when there was people around, but it did on one occasion, on an occasion when David, who was my assistant, I said to him, come out, and he came out with me, and he was carrying stuff as well. And I got to the door, and the door clicked and opened, and he was freaked out. He didn't want to stay there anymore. He's like, I want to go home, sort of thing. And I said, I don't worry, you know, you never heard of a ghost killing anyone. What's the matter with you? So I said, I don't know what it is, but anyway, I said, just say thank you. And, you know, he seems to be happy with that. So I then, when it happened, going back to the sort of first time it happened, I spoke to the housekeeper at the time and said to her, look, you know, this happened and can't really explain it. I don't know why. And she said, that's interesting. That has happened before. Other people have said that. She said, come on, I want to take you and show you something. So she took me up to one of the bedrooms. I can't remember what number the bedroom was. They all had numbers for the guests. So she took me into this bedroom, and she said, what do you see? So the bed was all made, and I sort of looked around the room, and then I looked at the bed, and I said, well, it looks like someone's been laying on that bed. She said, yeah, it does, doesn't it? She said, and we can't get rid of it. She said, we've changed the bed, changed the mattress, changed everything. When you make the bed and leave the room and come back, she said, someone's laying on that bed. It looks as if someone's laying on the bed. So she did it for me there and then. She demonstrated it. She made the bed, smoothed it all out, no wrinkles, left it really nice. Said, come out of the room. We came out of the room. We sat talking for 4 or 5 minutes. And they said, come on, let's go back in. Went back in and the bed was exactly the same. It looked like someone had just lain on it and got off. Very bizarre. And she said, it happens every time, all the time. She said, they don't know what the history, why it would do that. Or they didn't have, like, some people say, oh, yeah, this person died in here. And so it's the ghost of this old man or this old lady. They didn't really have a story for it. They said there's a lot of history with it, but they couldn't say what was real history. You know how things go, the stories get mixed up and sort of, you know, exaggerated, I suppose, over time. But there was something definitely, there was a vibe going on in that castle that was not normal, I would say.
Telepath is a weekly digital newsletter filled with the latest paranormal news, trending topics, and fresh articles from some of the most popular critical thinkers in the community today. Stay informed on your favorite paranormal podcasts and live streaming talk shows. Interact with the Telepath and upload your paranormal story or pics. It could be featured in an upcoming edition. Sign up right now for the free Telepath newsletter at paranormal.radio. That's paranormal.radio.
So then this continued to happen with the door open, and I was staying there. So on this particular night, I went to bed. It was a long day, so I was up at sort of 6 a.m. to get the breakfast ready, and by the time we'd done dinner, then we would have something to eat, and we'd have a drink, watch a bit of telly, you know, go to bed. I'd get to bed about 11, 12, you know, back up again 6 o'clock next morning. So I was pretty tired. So I'd gone to bed this day as normal, and then was woken in the night time, and it was definitely sort of middle of the night, 2-3 o'clock. And I woke up because my bedside table was shaking. It was rattling. And I sort of woke up and looked at it. I opened my eyes and it was right in front of me. And I could see everything sort of rattling around. And the lamp that was on there sort of rattled along and fell off the table. And I was like, I thought someone was playing a joke. So I looked down to the floor to the bed, see if someone had sneaked in and, you know, was under the bed with their hands on the legs, you know, shaking it. Because that's what I thought it was. And there was nothing there. There was nobody in the room. There was nothing there. And then it suddenly stopped. And I thought, okay, so I just turned over and went back to sleep, nothing. So then my alarm went off at 6 and I woke up and I put the light on and I had two huge sort of walnut or oak, I'm not sure, but there were two big solid chests of drawers and a big wardrobe in this room. Wardrobe doors were open and every drawer in those two chests were open to, you know, another millimetre and they would have fallen out. And every single drawer on those things were all pulled out to this sort of minute spot of not falling. It was bizarre. And I was like, okay, what's that about? So I don't know what it was about, but, you know, it freaked me out a little bit. And I went and checked in with the other staff there, said, anything wrong with your room? Did you hear anything last night? Nope, no one heard a thing, nothing. I was like, okay, right, okay. So whether this was just saying hello or what, I don't know. But and that's it, really. That continued. I worked there for what, 4 or 5 years, and went up there to, you know, on all the occasions there. I never felt any bad presence or any evil presence. It all seemed to be sort of good humoured. Always say thank you when the door opened for me. That was it, really. Yeah, that's the story.
Interesting. I mean, we got a helpful spirit. And we got a lazy spirit.
Yeah, may have been two different spirits. I don't know. It could have been the same one. It could have been a different. Maybe they were just having a bit of fun with us. But yeah, it was very very interesting. And I have to say, the lad who I'd shown this to, he didn't come back. I had another guy come up. He was too nervous. He didn't like it. He wasn't in the ghosts. And, you know, but we changed a couple of staff over those sort of 4 or 5 years I was there. But yeah, it was very interesting.
Interesting. I like that.
Yeah, that was, and I mean, I would get there as soon as the door, I would say thank you. And if I was the first time when I was sort of arrived for that year, if you like, that season, and that, I was a thank you, how you doing sort of thing, talk to it, like, you know, I never got an answer back, but, you know, I just thought it was a bit of fun, really, like.
Yeah, I lived in an old coach house in Warwickshire. And we had a very similar thing there, and we'd thank,
yeah,
you know, exactly, so you live in the same place, so why wouldn't you, you know, be courteous.
Yeah, don't be hostile, be welcoming. You know, I like to hear people's real life experiences. Okay, if you don't want to believe them, that's up to people. But I think, you know, most people that come on your show are pretty genuine, like me, can't explain what it is, but, you know, I've had an experience of some sort, you know, what it is, who knows. But definitely, you know, when you see how many people have had these experiences, I mean, it's a bit like that report they put out, you know, if you get 10,000 and 1% of them you can't explain, there's still a lot of unexplained UFOs, if you know what I mean. It's still, they can't all be, you know, they can't all be explained, and they can't all be just, you know, made up. There's got to be something there, you know, because it's worldwide now, isn't it? And there tends to be hotspots. What's interesting is, because I was thinking about this the other day, that, you know, where I am, I'm not right next to a base, but around here is a lot of American bases, you know, especially in the 70s, 80s with the nuclear and all that. So I wouldn't be surprised if there was more activity in areas like that, because it seems to be, you know, connected to UFOs, is these bases that have got military storage and military weapons and what have you. There definitely seems to be a sort of common denominator there with that sort of thing, where there's a high sort of sightings.
Well, Paul, I really appreciate you coming on, sharing that for our listeners today.
No problem. And if anything else happens, I'll drop you a note, you know, if there's anything else comes up while I'm here. I don't know. Yeah, it's, I sort of think got a feeling that one that shot across the sky and gave us that feeling of euphoria was maybe a goodbye, or that they're away maybe for a time. I don't know, but you just never know, do you? So, but if I have anything, I'll let you know. I'll drop you a line.
That's wonderful, Paul. All right, you enjoy the rest of the day, okay?
You too. Keep up the good work, mate.
All right. Take care.
Take care. Cheers.
Cheers, bye-bye. Paul. That is all for this week. Keep updated and connected with the show on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And if you have an encounter you would like to share on the podcast, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com or reach out to me via the contact page on my website at ufochroniclespodcast.com. A big thank you to Gareth and Paul for sharing tonight, and thank you all for listening. I will be back next week. Till then, stay safe and keep watching the skies. Goodbye.